Hey everybody, this is Drew.
And it's Blake.
And you're listening to the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Everybody, welcome to episode 114, if you know, if you're smart and fancy. Before we dive into our game, I'm going to go ahead and shoot through our social media preamble real quick. You can find us on all the social media platforms that you know and love just by searching the name of the podcast. There you can keep track of our comings and goings and all that fancy footwork that we do, sitting down and not moving, playing video games all the time. But the main thing that I want everyone to come and hang out with us on is we do a Twitch stream with our podcast editor and cousin, Brian. You can check us out on it's twitch.tv/2smokingcontrollers. And that's the word two, not the number two, the word two. Lastly, we have a pretty good, awesome little store filled with all sorts of propaganda to push our agenda forward to conquer the world through podcasts and video games that are off the beaten path, including our banner, which is a glorious pair of underwear that I hope that someone will model for us eventually. All of this can be found in the show notes. If you don't feel like typing anything, just click that little button that says show more, and you'll just have a list of everything you can click on to your heart's content to take to all these wonderful, wonderful places. With that being said, that sums up all of our social media preamble, and we're ready to dive into our game of the week, game of the episode. Right. You have anything
if you listen to the past episode, we always try to now announce our next game, so you would know that maybe you could play it or maybe hear about it or do something with the game, so the episodes kind of maybe make more sense if you have any knowledge of the game. But I'm not going to say the name of the game because Blake's going to do that.
The name of the game that we are speaking about today is called Ravenlock. Ravenlock originally came out May 4th, 2023. It's a fairly new game. It came out... this is actually pretty cool. Well, no, let me get to the company and then I'll talk about this. It is published and developed by Coco Cucumber. They are a Toronto-based indie video game company.
Yeah, we didn't come across too many Canadian developers, have we?
Mm-mm. They've been around for I didn't actually write down the year they came out. They've been out for about 10 years. No, 8 years. They're fairly new. They've made 5 video games, and they're 11 people total. So that's a pretty nice, solid number of 11 folk. I have a little brief description of all their games right here. Their very, very first one was called Bunny Bonker. And it was like it's a mobile only, and it was a shooting gallery where you hit it as it pops up, like little, like whack-a-mole thing type little, yeah. Situation. It's their first thing they did.
Yeah.
But then they put out another one called Planet of the Eyes, which is like this little retro sci-fi, side-scrolling physics-based puzzler. And it seemed okay, and you can find that on like Steam and mobile and a couple of things. And then their next 3 games, which they themselves call the Voxel Trilogy. Their first game is called Riverbond, And it is a Diablo-like dungeon crawler that's couch co-op only, unfortunately. But it was drop-in, drop-out couch co-op of a Diablo-like in voxel-style art form.
The River Bond?
River Bond, yeah. B-O-N-D. And then their next game, which I think this one was the one that kind of was piqued their interest specifically. This one was called Echo Generation. And so Echo Generation was it's a turn-based, I guess you could call it like a Saturday morning cartoon almost, is what it kind of described itself as. Mm-hmm. It's a little turn-based RPG set in, again, voxel-style art graphics. But what happened that kind of really threw them was it got mass amounts of praise from some of the folk at Xbox, and it got their attention to the point. Now, the Xbox didn't purchase, but they did sign a partnership deal with Echo Generation and Ravenlock so far that they were Xbox exclusive properties. That you can only get Echo Generation and Ravenlock on Microsoft and Xbox.
Yeah, I feel like we just missed. Well, I think I looked at Echo Generation when it was like leaving Game Pass. Maybe it's still on Game Pass, but I guess what you're.
I'm interested in it. Like I looked at it. It looked fun. It looked really cool. Because this one, Ravenlock, like they call this their voxel trilogy because they really liked what they were doing, but they realized that they need to move on. This third game in voxel art, they need to move on to do something else. They did say that Ravenlock was the culmination of everything they've learned about voxel graphics and the voxel art style. So this Ravenlock is the best that they will ever be doing voxel stuff. And what makes it so good is the environment is it's 3D but non-voxel, while all the characters are voxel style characters placed in a 3D world with no voxel art, so it makes them stand out and pop a little more. But even the characters are incredibly well detailed with the voxel. Like it's
at least in Ravenlock. I don't know if the other two games.
No, they weren't. Ravenlock is the best. The other ones are more like what you call it. Riverbond even has like the looking like Minecraft character Steve and stuff. But this Ravenlock, they said there was the culmination, and they're still working on updates and getting it out. They put out an update back in like July last year, so it's not even been a full year since the last time they updated it. But they said they're going to finish support for the game, and then they already have their sights set on something else, and it won't be voxel, but they just don't know what it's going to be.
Surely they know something.
I'm sure they got something, but they're teasing.
But we're not the biggest fans of voxel art. Did we talk about the taxi game on here?
Cloudpunk. Cloudpunk.
I did talk about Cloudpunk on here. That was an okay game that would have looked cool or not in voxel art. Ravenlock actually looks. I think I wrote something somewhere. Maybe I do have notes that I wrote down somewhere. Ravenlock actually looks probably the best looking voxel game I've seen. Because voxel games mostly pretty ugly. Everybody be like, "Ooh, it's an art style. It's not ugly." Most voxel games I've seen are pretty ugly looking up until Ravenlock, I would say.
Wasn't there a fishing one that you tried playing?
I dabbled for like a day. Bounced off of it. Yeah.
Dredge. It was no Dredge.
And Dredge was the better version of whatever the other game was called.
Exactly.
Something Bay.
Bah Humbug.
Moonlight Bay, something like that.
I don't want to keep speaking. People know who don't know what voxel is. It's the Minecraft art style.
Minecraft started it.
Yeah. The cubes and whatnots and stuff. Now they call it their voxel trilogy. They did the director and I guess the two CEOs. One is a gentleman named Martin Gavro, but the lead person is a lady named Vanessa Chia, and she for Ravenlock specifically, she wrote, directed, produced the game, and she also wrote and directed Echo Generation.
Okay,
so she's their lead CEO, whatever person. She's their boss lady. And she said they did their best effort to make sure that each of the three games played differently. Like I said, we had the Diablo-like Riverbond, turn-based RPG combat for Echo Generation, and Ravenlock is more of the...
like a 3D action-adventure?
Yeah, like a third-person action-adventure. Now, what's cool is one of the updates they added out, I have it wrote here, was called the Dark Raven update, which came out less than a month after the game came out, and it allowed full control over the camera.
So we could talk about that, because I feel like the game might have been designed around fixed camera angles.
It was originally.
So that's it. It's a cool. I think you could call it a cool update, but I found myself not liking the way I was like moving about the map and then like moving my camera. Because like when you design something, you don't. You design a game to either have a camera, or you design a game to have fixed, and then the way you look at stuff, or the way you design a screen or a map or any or a dungeon or whatever, the way you design it would be based on how you're looking at it. So they had these fixed camera angles when they first started it, yeah. And then when we played, we were able to move the camera around, and it kind of like it felt wrong, and sometimes it's like it just didn't move the right way, or you couldn't get it where you kind of wanted it to be. It never caused me to die or anything, but you can kind of definitely, because I read it in like we followed a TA guide or something where the guy mentions that and some of his directions would be off a little bit because you've turned the camera around. Because
when he played it, your camera couldn't be turned. Now I think the camera could be panned, like, you know, just a little bit, like left or right or whatever, but they said they unlocked the camera with a full 360 degree camera control with the Dark Raven update, which also came with a feature on one of the like the main menu, like a boss-a-rama, to let you fight all the bosses back to back once you've unlocked them and stuff like that. And that also included a because they don't really serve a purpose, they're just cosmetic, and there are some of the achievements are related to these, but these little hats and masks you can wear, they don't do anything. They don't give any extra bonus. They're just cosmetic. But they added more of those, and then there's like a DLC pack that had a whole bunch of them. They're just hats and masks. They're cool or whatever. They don't. I did change it just because they were there.
Every time I unlocked one, I just equipped it.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. And a lot of them popped achievements for like equip this hat, equip this mask.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. One kind of cool thing that did happen, though, just you know, just how things kind of work, is they were celebrating a cool thing, the 6 weeks mark, which is when the game came out, they were super excited about announcing a milestone that 6 weeks after the game came out, they had a unique, what do you call it, unique downloads or something like that, of 500,000 downloads. That's pretty awesome. Company. Yeah. Well, admittedly, I think it launched on Game Pass.
Yeah.
So obviously, it was like a bad stigma of trying out a new game for money. He's like, let me try this out. Oh, it sucks or it's good or whatever. But they had 500,000 unique downloads in the first 6 weeks, which is a pretty awesome thing. And one of them, which I think is pretty cool, one of the announcements, it was after the 6 week time, but it was actually a month after their Dark Raven update. They were talking about they're so thankful to Xbox for. I actually have a tweet here from the company. It says that we appreciate Phil. Thank you so much. Oh, no, I don't know how to read Twitter. Okay, no. Okay, because you have to read. Okay, I don't. I'm retarded. Okay, right here it's from Phil Spencer, and it says I really enjoyed playing Ravenlock. Thank you, Coco Cucumber, for everything you've done. You're doing a great job. And then Coco Cucumber responds, we appreciate Phil. Thank you so much for playing Ravenlock. We're grateful to be a part of Team Xbox and Xbox Game Pass. Here's to making many more games together. Mm-hmm. So like Phil Spencer, like I played the game maybe played the game. I'm not sure how, you know, advertising works, but like he went out of his way to see. So I'm sure he probably played it and enjoyed it because the game itself isn't long.
Yeah, it's not long at all.
Not long at all. I got the 1K in 5 hours and 16 minutes.
Oh, that's weird. That's my exact time.
Really? 5 hours and 16 minutes?
Yeah, that's a rapid
That's before. Never happened before.
Yeah, that is
that's
weird.
That's wonky.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I liked a good 5-hour expound. I mean,
yeah.
We were talking earlier off the podcast when we were doing running errands. I need some short, because we're playing a long, you'll come to the podcast later, we're playing a really long game on Gamefly right now, and I'm like, I like it, but dang, it's just... How to prefer short games.
Yeah, like I'll sit down to it.
I just come off 90 something hours of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
Long games, man.
Yeah, I don't like I said, give me, I'm perfectly fine with a 20 hour RPG. Yeah. I love it.
We've played really good 20 hour RPGs, too.
We have. Immediately off the top of my head, I think of Cosmic Star Heroine and Battle Chasers Night War. both fantastic little turn-based RPGs. Now, in order to get the 1K in both of them, you have to play a little longer or the Platinum Trophy. But I think even with doing the Platinum in Cosmic Star Heroine, it's like 25 hours. I think my other one was about 30 or 35. Leave us wanting more, man. Get
Cosmic
in.
Cosmic Star Heroine's only on PlayStation, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, keep talking.
And then that's kind of it for the... I hit the company a bit, and I've spoken about the game a little bit and kind of, you know, praised them. I think it's time that we kind of jump fully into the game.
Oh, yeah. Way off. What? My Battle Chasers Night War, which I really like that game. Uh-huh. My Battle Chasers Night War time was 71 hours.
Oh, God. Okay, maybe so that's not a short game.
That's not a short game at all.
Well, we had to replay it for the 1K.
Average is between 60 and 80 for a completion. Yeah, if you play through one time, yeah, probably. Maybe. But, yeah, that's a really good game. It's not the last achievement I got was finish New Game Plus, but I liked the game a lot. So
likewise, okay. I remember I felt like it was shorter, but
Because it's so good, so maybe so good it felt short, I guess. But that was a bad example. But Cosmic Star Heroine for one, I played a game recently that'll be on the podcast. Not a super great game, but I played Shadows of Adam. Mm-hmm. So Blake will be playing that soon. It's really short. We played both of the first two. We're spoiling games for the podcast. We played both of the first Yeez games, mm-hmm. 1 and 2. Be on the podcast soon. Those are both, 8 or 9 hours a piece?
Combined, yeah.
Combined is around 20.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, man, short games, man.
I'm nowadays, I'm fine with it. And I'm not like, oh, because I don't have time. I got time to play video games. I give myself about 2 or 3 hours night.
Yeah, you just come off of a back-to-back Death Stranding and then Final Fantasy Rebirth. I mean, mm-hmm. those are both 100 hours
yeah.
a piece, you know?
My thing is, because there are so many games out there in the world. And I prefer to finish something that I start. Like nowadays, everyone just plays it and then stops.
We talked about before, once we started not achievement hunting as hardcore, mm-hmm. we gave ourselves the leeway to quit a game.
Yeah,
we used to play something all the way through, even if we didn't like it, to get all the achievements. So we quit stuff all the time now. I'm like, I'm not. It's what's your thing? What's the thing if you're off the game a day or two and you haven't thought about it?
Yeah, I don't know what you call that, but it's one of those things. If you have had no inkling or thought about a game,
you let it go.
We just like, man, because we've done that. We've had stuff on Gamefly and whatnot, or even stuff that's like on Game Pass that's leaving Game Pass. We're like, oh yeah, we should try that out, and we'll play it for a night. We're like, oh okay. This is, you know, it's an okay game. And then like 2 or 3 days go by. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really got to play that game before it leaves Game Pass. Mm. Nah, do I?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Yeah, you would see a lot of things. Nobody's looking to our Xbox history before. We used to really achievement hunt pretty hard back in more in the 360 days. And that was pretty much play any and everything we got between Gamefly and everything else. And there were little cheap stuff and But now it's just like, man, there's so many games and there's not enough time, and we started letting things go.
Yeah, if I'm not enjoying it, not all games are made for me. I'm not gonna go out of my way to give it a 1-star review because this game wasn't for me. Whatever, it wasn't for me. Just forget about it. It's mm-hmm. Everything, every video game out there is someone's favorite video game. So just let them have it and don't just move about your life. But anyway, I don't know what we said to get back on off on that tangent. Really talking about stuff.
Needless to say, not a Game Pass podcast, but we did play Ravenlock when it was leaving Game Pass. That's how we upon it. I saw it when it came to Game Pass. I always see like the new releases.
Yeah, the art law.
Every time when something comes, always something comes to Game Pass, I was like, "That looks cool. I'll play it when it's leaving."
Exactly.
That's how I do it. Which puts me in a bind for anything owned by Microsoft. I was like, "Well, I don't know when I'll play that because it'll never leave."
We'll have to make a point.
Make a whole point to play it. Yeah, like to date the podcast. Hellblade 2 is coming out, so I was like,
"Yeah, for me also for you as well." What's that? Rat's Plague? Plague's Tale Requiem?
Requiem, yeah. But that's not owned by Microsoft.
I want to play that so bad. I just haven't got around to it. Because yeah. I loved Innocence.
Yeah, Innocence was great. It was on the podcast. Both Innocence was on the podcast, and so was the original Hellblade, I think, back mm-hmm. in the early episodes was on the podcast.
And again, talking about short games, both of those, I think Hellblade's like 6 hours.
Yeah.
And Innocence is 15, Yeah. Something like that. Just a nice, solid story.
Yeah, I looked up my Hellblade stuff recently. It was like 6 hours. Let's see, my Plague Tale. Keep talking, though.
So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We're going to go ahead and dive into like the story of Ravenlock. You, like, immediately from the get-go, It is it's 110% inspired by Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland.
Not bad. My innocence time, 14 and a half hours.
Because mine's probably similar. Probably like 18 because I, you know.
Fall asleep. That's all,
yeah.
Anyway, back to this game.
But so Ravenlock is 110% inspired by Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's straight up Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Did you happen to look and see is Alice in Wonderland public domain?
Yeah.
It is. So I wonder why they wouldn't. Like, it is straight. Like,
actually,
but they change. I don't know.
I don't know. Actually, I don't think I looked into Lewis Carroll being.
The only thing I wonder if it's public. Because, like, everything in this is all the characters. Everybody you meet is just Alice in Wonderland characters, but they change all the names. So they would only do that, I think, if Alice in Wonderland wasn't public domain. Otherwise, you would just use the exact names. Because it's like, it's straight up. Now, I didn't know that when we were turning it on. I didn't know it was going to be like big whole Alice in Wonderland thing. But that's like 100% what it is, except for the only person that does your mate, your little character. I don't remember her name.
Kira.
She doesn't seem like an Alice to me.
No, she's a little more. Well, she's like a modern day Alice. I mean, because it's modern day ish. They move from a big city to a small farmhouse and so on and so forth. I was trying to real quick. I can't tell if
that's not that important, but it just seems strange that none of it uses any of the names from Alice in Wonderland.
I'm going to assume it's not if they didn't. I mean,
because why wouldn't you?
Exactly. Or maybe they just wanted to tell. They wanted to. Like I said, just inspired by. Because we thought, like I said, it is a reimagining.
Yeah, sort of.
Of Alice in Wonderland. But like I said, we follow Kira, who has moved into her new home in the countryside after inheriting the estate from a now missing family member.
Mm-hmm.
So it already kind of starts off kind of weird and dark. And they tell her parents are like, you know, go play. You know, we don't have anything hooked up. Go explore the area. You know, and then she, you know, you uncover a mirror, a.k.a. a looking glass.
Yeah, exactly.
In the barn or a shed. And then
get pulled into it.
Shenanigans ensues.
Yeah. And she's bestowed, like, the first, who she talked to, like, the, who she talked to first?
But the first person she talks to is the White Rabbit.
Yeah, and he like starts calling her Ravenlock like right away. So she's some like prophesized person, Ravenlock, and this girl just goes with the flow.
Yeah,
she doesn't ask any questions. She's just like, go for it. And
just so you know, the name Ravenlock, it just means raven locks. She has dark raven colored hair, and that's a Ravenlock.
But Ravenlock is the prophesied hero of the land for their
little
story.
That's why she's called that, because she has dark hair, raven-colored hair. Da-da-da-da, puppy power. That's the name. Nothing clever. The best part about the game is they don't try to be clever. They're just like, you already know what this is. We're just having fun with it.
Yeah.
Go with the flow like Kira is,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. Ravenlock, mm-hmm. her goth name. And one of the I did love it. One of the very first achievements that you get, and it teaches you how to collect collectibles, is there's a dedicated button on the D-pad that lets you dance a jig, and you have to dance in order to break these collectible jars.
It's like a little rabbit statues.
Yeah,
and you stand next to them and you dance. The only thing the dance button's used for.
Yeah.
And they shake and poof and they go away. And we'll meet a guy here in a little bit who you trade in the collectibles for. And thankfully, more games to do this, the collectibles that actually give you a reward, in-game reward.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it gives you, like, stats and items. Or
items to help you upgrade and stuff.
Yeah, he actually gives you stuff for doing it. I was like, thank God. Like, there's still 9 out of 10 games with collectibles don't give you anything for them. Why is it so hard to give you in-game rewards for collectibles?
And I'd be okay with literally anything, even, like, just some, like, production art or...
I would prefer
in-game.
Now, there's a lot of games give you production art. And let's be honest. I love video games. I'm not looking at production art.
Half the time,
nobody really is. Like, you need in-game rewards for
something. Give me both.
I'll give you both, but give me, like, some money, some experience, you know, something. You know, it's. I don't see why that's so hard to figure out, especially...
I hate collectibles that are just to be collected, and they don't actually serve a purpose.
That's most collectibles.
Yeah. Or you'll get all 900 of the stupid collectible, and they'll like, hey, man, congratulations. And, you know, they'll just...
You're talking about, like, Breath of the Wild.
And crap like that. Yeah, there's literally no point in doing everything. The game itself, like I said, with the subject matter, it does do... what's the word I'm looking for? It does do, like, the darker stuff. It doesn't, like... veer away, even with the voxel art. Some of the stuff, it like explodes violently or is, you know, as gory as a voxel art can be. They're not explicit, but they do show it. Because one of the first things you do, one of the first bosses you fight is something called the Weeping Fungi. Mm-hmm. And the reward for beating him is you get his head as a talisman. His decapitated head as a talisman that helps you, like, it grows. I forget what you use it for, but it's just like a...
Well, you just take it back to the witch, don't you?
Yeah, and she throws it in some stew or whatever. But, like, the, one of the first things you get is his head.
Yeah.
His decapitated head.
We didn't, let's just say, this is you said all their games played, all the three of the voxel games played differently. This is like a 3D action-adventure combat game. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a sword. She gets a, pulls a sword from a stone, which is above all things.
Yeah.
And then you just have an attack button, a really, really rapid attack button.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's like...
I have it... the combat is... I haven't noted it. Because you don't really get to experience until you get that first boss fight. But the combat is surprisingly smooth.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not...
It's simple.
It's simple. It's just like kind of like... The, I think you're, it's one of the games more about... exploring the world and talking to people. Like, mm-hmm. This is a game that probably could have done without it, but the bosses and stuff are actually all right.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the fighting, everything you fight, you can just wail on the freaking attack button and slaughter it. But the combat could have been a lot worse.
Yes.
It's not like, it ain't gonna be like, this is like the coolest combat, you know, it ain't no God of War or anything like that.
It's not intricate.
Yeah. You mash, you have a block, and you have magic spells.
And you have a dodge.
Yeah, I use the dodge. I almost never use the block. The block's kind of slow.
Yeah, because you get a sword and shield combo, and then you get five magic... Hold on, I have it written down here. You get one, two, three... You get four magic spells based around, like, four major bosses throughout the game.
Each boss, like, kind of gives you, like, an upgrade or something.
Yeah, but you have your sword and shield, then your spells are... Bullet Spray, which you will use the entire game. It's
homing, yeah.
Broken. It's awesome. Then you get like a spear dash where she just lunges forward.
I missed a lot with that one.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's maybe one thing the combat's missing. There's no lock on.
Yeah, there is no lock on. That spear dash worked situationally, like in a hallway or a corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure the difference between the two, but a hallway or a corridor. I know they're hallways. And then you had one that was like a rapid slash. Like even it's funny. I think I dealt more damage mashing the attack button than using this blade. I think I hit the button faster than the system. You use this thing called Fury Blade, which is like a rapid slash in front of you. But if anything moved out of the way, it didn't take.
It can miss too.
It can miss. Then your last thing was really awesome, and it was a big old area cover called the Fireball Trimmer, where you like hit the ground. These like. Wave of
AOE kind of lifts them.
Yeah,
AOE attacks.
But the majority of the time, I was just bullet spraying.
Well, it's just a bit of a way they all have cooldowns, mm-hmm. So if you're fighting like a big group of enemies or a boss, it's easy just to like cycle through your magic, your skills. Just hit one. By the time you're done, you go back to the first one, hit it, and you could do cycle through it.
Yeah.
And all the bosses were cool, different. Yeah, and they actually looked really cool. I think I noted. I don't get my notebook.
Go get you. You had to have made and had some notes.
Yeah. We talk about. I don't know if I've had anything for the boss, but you remember how you fight the little poison.
The fungi thing? It was fungi just. The weeping fungi was just. You know, it's just your standard kind of like strafe around and strike. And then you get some tools. Like I said, you got your sword and your shield. And then you get two. There are two other things you get throughout the game. You get potions, different style of health potions, and you have bombs, fire bombs, ice bombs, and poison bombs. And as you progress through the game, you eventually get the ability to buy them instead of find them. But with this little hedgehog's shop, now there's an achievement for buying like I think 20 potions and 30 bombs, and the bombs are expensive. But it gets to a point where you have so much money anyway. What's it matter? And because you only spend money on either upgrading your swords, your weapon, and then buying the potions and the bombs. And after a little bit, you have a bunch of money and nothing to spend it on, because these bombs were powerful. They were very powerful and incredibly useful in certain situations.
You're giving them a lot of them as rewards too,
mm-hmm.
Little quest rewards and stuff like that. Same thing with the potions.
Yeah, I was kind of just talking about the potions and the bombs.
Yeah,
But yeah, for the most part, that first boss fight was just like strafe around, hit, use your magic spell, throw a bomb, and you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, done. Wasn't anything too arduous. And then from there, you kind of like move on, and you slowly go through the world, and you get introduced to a couple of places. One in particular is there's this mansion that you go to, and I really dug the music in the mansion. I actually liked
there's a lot of good music.
I liked a lot of the soundtrack
that really fit the feel of the world.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that,
I like the one. Is it Inside the Mansion?
There's two mansions. There's like a Clockwork Mansion, and then there's like the Mask Mansion. I think it was the
Mask Mansion. Right outside it, there's a theme that plays as you run past the fountain and the garden. There's a thing like a piano thing that plays, and you hear that one a lot as you're running back and forth. I remember like kind of enjoying that one. I don't know what it was called or how to find it.
Well, the good news is the entire soundtrack is on Spotify. So we can find it. And it was actually, the composer is a gentleman named Mike Lazzola Rocca. He's part of a musical collective called the Eggplant Collective. But he himself, he was the composer for all the music. And you can either search his name or search Ravenlock and you can get the full soundtrack on Spotify.
Cool.
So we should be able to find some easy enough songs. And listen to them.
Yeah.
Now, during the mansion, you go through a couple different things. But this mansion, I'm trying to think. Okay, one of the cool things that happens in the mansion is a part of these people, because, like Drew says, you just kind of go with the flow. You go in, and your character just believes what these characters are like. Oh no, we're being beat up by these people. Okay, I'll save you. Like she doesn't even think to question these people. Admittedly, they're not bad or anything, but she doesn't question anything. She just takes people at their word.
Mm-hmm.
And they're these little. They're called soot bunnies. I loved all the character designs. Mm-hmm. I did and enjoyed every single character design.
Yeah. Talk about the bosses. We'll get back to that. All the bosses look really cool.
Mm-hmm. The soot bunnies, though, I want to make note, because as soon as I saw the soot bunnies and realized what they were, the first thing that shot through my head is the, I don't remember what they're called, but I think they're called like the soot spirits from like Spirited Away.
Yeah.
That's literally the first thing I thought of. You know, they were just...
I'm sure that's what they were thinking, too, when they made them.
But these guys, instead of chucking coal into a furnace, were being slaved away to make costumes for a stage play, which was kind of silly. And during that mansion, there's this kind of cool Harley Quinn ambush that you get jumped by the Harley Quinn puppets. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first times where I realize like these bombs are amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's like instantaneous. Like it freezes gameplay, lets you click on the bomb and then you throw it.
Yeah.
And you can target the person you're throwing, and it has an area effect, so you can blow it. And like that part, the Harley Quinn ambush during the mansion was probably like, I was like, I love these bombs. Mm-hmm. Like this is,
it's like the first big combat. There's lots of combat.
And it's an ambush. Like you're like caught on like a stairwell and you have to like fight your way back down to the open foyer, whatever you want to call it. But yeah. Okay, ambush. Okay, so right after that, it happens, I think, twice in the game. Once now, and once near the end of the game, where you're thrown into like a sneaking section. When you do the Tweedledees, Tweedledums, you got to run around with the Mad Hatter.
It's not too difficult.
It's the easiest sneaking I've ever done in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you don't walk into the person that's patrolling, you can just run around willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. Like, I, as soon as it said sneaking, I was like, I'm about to turn this game off because they're probably going to do sneaking horribly.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, so ready to hate it, and then I did it, and I was like, oh, it's not really sneaking at all.
You just kind of walk around them,
run around, do your own thing. But that was to like the fight the Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the Tweedle twins.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are familiar with, I think actually is that the only one they actually use the name.
Are they called the Tweedle? Oh, they are called. I wrote my notes here. They are called the Tweedle twins. I guess that's the only one they did. So maybe they. I don't. Who knows what they were doing?
I don't know.
Because the other stuff, like I mean, the fungi, and there's a boar. We hadn't talked about Bovador, I guess the bison.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Thor, Loran, if I could read my own handwriting, the Hydra,
mm-hmm.
and Helios, the gold, whatever that is. Golem, maybe? Is that a golem?
Glutton.
The glutton?
You have Ugsak the glutton.
But anyway, those aren't Alice in Wonderland references. You know?
Yeah, so I don't know.
Really. Who freaking knows? Mm.
But when during that boss fight with the Tweedle twins, it did a really annoying thing in a very awesome, child-friendly way. Was you're fighting twins, and each one of them does a specific attack, and they take turns doing their attack, but like they took turns in the best way. Like, one literally just walked around and waited for the other one to attack, and then once it attacked, it took a step back and walked around, and then the other one, like, they weren't like doing it at the same time and knocking you. Like, they were literally terrible. Taking turns, but in the best way. They were sharing, and sharing is caring, y'all. And I made a note. Like, I specifically said that the Tweedle twins took turns attacking, but in the best way possible.
Yeah, I wrote Tweedle twins boss. I used all my bombs. I don't know. I don't remember why though.
Who knows?
I don't know why I used all my bombs on them.
Not really sure.
We're kind of jumping all over the places because we're terrible at making podcasts. But the bison boss was a pretty typical like. But pretty typical, like, stampede and get out of the way, hit him. Mm-hmm. But a very cool looking.
Yeah, he boss. Was like a, I don't even know how to describe him, like a, not a pinata, but he was kind of
like a,
like, yeah, yeah,
like, a color, like a pinata. Like a bison. Spanish pinata. Mm-hmm. Was like a.
He did burst when you popped him. You know, yeah,
his heart burst out of
burst like, straight you, out you of his chest.
Heart out of his chest to take it to the witch.
It was one of the ingredients, his head, the heart, and something else to make a potion. I forget exactly why you were doing it.
Yeah, and then when he was dead, he was sitting there with his hole in his chest.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty cool.
And that had those really cool, like, deer demon boss enemies in that little garden area.
Yeah, that place was cool because there was a quality of life thing there that people don't often think of. Sometimes is that there's these three deer you gotta. This is like right after the you fight the.
It's your next area after the bison.
This is before the bison. This is after the.
Oh yeah.
The fungi. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it does a thing where each of these three deer have a short
little. They're four deer.
Whatever.
One for each season.
Well, they're all in there. And they all have a quest, but a quest that involves doing something in the area. And a lot of the stuff is hanging out in the area already. There's these little things to break, there's enemies to kill, and some stuff to pick up. Mm-hmm. They don't, like, it's all there before you talk to them. So you're just doing this stuff. And thankfully, after you talk to them, and they're like, oh, I want so many things killed or whatever. If you've already done it, the dialogue just continues until the completion.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
but they didn't like reset a counter. They just kept a.
Yeah, I feel like people had learned all. People started learning this from Witcher.
Maybe because I remember it happening in some other games, but it's happened a lot more since Witcher. The Witcher.
Yeah,
right. Witcher 3 specifically.
Witcher 3, where people address quests being done already. It's becoming more and more common
because that's actually happening in the game we're playing now.
The game we're gameplay game. It's really good at like already acknowledging that you've already done the thing, mm-hmm. and that's like a more modern way of handling RPGs and not just RPGs, other games will do it too. Like, oh, I've already done this. Actually, I think it might be, I don't know if it's doing it. Does it do it in a sec? Because my wife's playing Assassin's Creed Origins right now too, like I did. I feel like that addresses it, like you've already done things too sometimes.
It might have that still post Witcher 3.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Not sure.
Eh. Who knows?
Who knows the dates on that stuff? But I appreciate that those kind of things that keeps people like that's a little of like respecting your time when they think of something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not gonna like, oh, I've already say because what I do and the Blake probably did too is I ran around that room and killed a bunch of stuff and collected some items and now if I had done that and then ran back and then he was like, oh, I need you to go kill five of these things and I done killed like 15 of them just running around the room.
Yeah, it's just been a big old eye roll.
It'd be like, oh, come on. But they acknowledged that I'd already done it, and then I just moved forward on all four of the deer, had their quest done, and got whatever item I needed to move on. It was, like, really smooth. The only time it's really even needed in that game, really. But it's handled. Yeah. No, it's actually done a couple of times because we're following a guide that would have us go get an item for later, and then you would talk to the person, and be like, I already got it. You already have the item.
Yeah, go ahead and collect this.
Have a key or have something for something else or anything like that. You would already have it because we're following a guide, but the game would acknowledge it, had the dialogue. Like, it's like, it's different. Like, you would be able to, like, this one I think was doing where the conversation just continued. It wasn't like, exit out, the game registers, you've done it, go back into the conversation. I think this one just kept talking, mm-hmm. acknowledging that you've already done it and kept going. It's a rare thing in video games, I feel like, and it's kind of cool to see it.
Most games will have you like, oh yeah, I'll do that. And then it boots you, like you said, it boots you out of the conversation, and then their exclamation point appears, and you have to re-trigger. It doesn't do it all in one fell swoop. Mm-hmm. Now, after that bison boss, I think this was probably, for me, one of the more annoying fights, just because it was kind of, it's Ugsak the Glutton, which is the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, is that what it
is? He's the caterpillar. And he was that boss fight that was like right in front of the book that led up to the probably my favorite boss in the entire game.
Hydra.
Mm-hmm. But he just like spat acid or fire, but he was immune to damage on like the sides and the front, so you can only hit him in the back, and it was just annoying to try to...
You're not behind him.
Yeah, your character didn't move fast enough, and it got to the point where I threw bombs at him, and I spammed my the bullet. Oh, the man. Bullet spray, just it was.
Did it actually home in on the weak spot?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that was, honestly, I think that's probably the most annoying boss in the whole game was that guy, just because it was like, it was different, and you had to specifically hit him in the back, but he hardly ever turned his back to you or anything. You had to like strafe around him, and that one was probably my least favorite fight in the whole game. I'll be honest. But then it followed by probably my favorite looking boss in the entire game, which was awesome.
Yeah, the Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
Thorlion.
Yeah, I think that's his name. But there's little.
Is anything you want to talk about? Like talk about more of the world and stuff like that. If you got notes for all that stuff, I'm getting if anybody cannot tell, I'm getting really bad. I'm coming to find out. We talked about when we started the new kind of era of this podcast, taking notes and stuff. I really hate taking notes for video games, so my notes become more and more sparse depending on what game I'm playing, because I just want to play the video game and then talk about it later. I don't want to be writing down everything I'm seeing, but I probably should take more legit notes.
Because after, it's literally like the next screen, after Ugsak the Glutton, there's this little mountain or hill of teacups, and you have to meet, Amon the Serpent,
mm-hmm.
and he's asleep, and you have to wake him up by picking these things called Jolt Cloves. Now, it's not hard to find them. There's like four or five of them in the air, super easy to find. I just found it very annoying.
But on the flip side, there's something that you can't pick until you talk to him.
Yeah,
you can see him, but you can't pick him. Weird, huh?
Yeah, I thought that was strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
But every time you picked it up, she said the same lines of dialogue
mm-hmm.
every time. I was like, just say it once. I don't have to say it every time I pick up one of these stupid things.
Yeah. The game's not voiced except for her swinging a weapon in combat. And
voices.
Like, has that, but no other voice acting in the game. Not that was... odd.
Me too. I thought it was very strange. But now, like I said, you have to get those things to wake up this thing called Amon the Serpent. And he's just a person who was drugged by the queen or whatever to keep from fighting back. Now, Amon the Serpent is a super creepy looking thing. The description I have here is creepy looking. He's a three-eyed meat snake with a boar snout and tusks.
Meat snake?
That's what he is. He didn't look like he had any skin. It was just meat. Just muscle. It was gross looking.
No,
it was the grossest looking thing. And then once you wake him up, he's like, oh no, the Hydra is coming. And that's when you get I think you and me both agree this is the coolest looking. This is the coolest, but I have another boss that I think is really awesome too. But this is probably the coolest boss in the entire game. This Hydra, because the combat is really cool and smooth and functions really well. It's I don't know how to describe it. It was just good. It was probably I felt it was like the
height. You remember the? It's done in phases, ain't it?
It's done in phases. Because it's a Hydra. It's got three heads or three things hitting, and one thing breathes fireballs. One thing swipes across. The other thing slams, and they boom, you know, just find the pattern and just kind of flow through it. And it's it looks really cool. And they're yellow looking dragon snake heads coming out of a teacup, or rather, it was a teacup or a tea kettle. I think it was a teacup, because I think that was the whole ensemble.
Yeah, because you climbed a teacup mountain to get there,
and that was easily the coolest boss.
Yeah.
in the whole thing. Do you have this also, because you fight some bosses early on to get the ingredients to take this potion, which lets you do this thing to further, and then this is the first boss.
Is this the first of the big ones? You're collecting their hearts,
the heart containers
to get the put the hearts into the door to get the lock to the queen's area.
Yeah, go into the queen's area. He's the first heart container.
Okay,
because there's three heart containers to make it into the queen's door to unlock to the final area. But he is the first of the heart container doors, and from him, you go into the labyrinth. Which I think the labyrinth is the start of probably my least favorite enemies in the entire game. and they're a common enemy. There's these stupid little jumping spiders. You remember those?
No, I don't remember.
They started in the labyrinth, and there's just these, like, annoying, not necessarily annoyingly difficult to hit, but they have an annoyingly high, like, health bar or whatever, a number of hits it took to kill them. And they would spit like a sticky acid or something at you, and it would, I don't know, they annoyed the heck out. They were,
I don't even remember.
They were annoying. I didn't much care for them. I will say, besides the mansion, I think the labyrinth was probably my second favorite music. If I can find the title for that, but I really, really dug the labyrinth music.
Okay. Yeah.
And I also liked that part, brain. This part was really cool because it did this thing where as you're going through the labyrinth, you break in these glass trees. And now you can just walk past them. But if you're breaking them, you're picking up a collectible you need to finish at the end of the... Once you make it to like the heart of the labyrinth or whatever. And if you've done everything, then you just fix this. But those little...
Mirror shards.
The mirror shards for these glass trees was really cool.
The glass trees look cool, yeah.
They looked really cool. And the labyrinth itself, it's not too difficult. You can only go down the right path.
It's not much labyrinth, yeah.
It's the least difficult labyrinth I've ever experienced in a video game, I think. Now, once you're done with that, you end up like this kind of, like the next area. And there's this cool little quiz you had to do. You had to like answer these questions three for this dude, and he gave you whatever item you needed to move on. And it was kind of cool. It's silly, but I thought it was kind of cool because it was like, did you know facts? And all the facts were about frogs, and they were all legitimate facts that I was like, each one I went, once I realized it, because we used a TA guide, so they had all the, he's like A, B, C, answer those questions and you're done. But the answers to each of the questions, the fact that they're true, kind of like, I was like, oh, that's so awesome. I didn't know that happened. But I'm going to read off these three facts. I think they're pretty cool and worth sharing. Three cool frog facts. That every time a frog eats something, it has to blink. Because the blinking motion actually helps it swallow food easier.
Yeah.
It has to blink. Because whatever muscles it moves when it blinks and opens its eyes, it helps it swallow food easier. And I was like, that's wild that it has to blink in order to make swallowing easier for itself. I also didn't know that they can hold their breath between... I know they're amphibian, and so they live in and out of water, but I didn't realize how much. But they can hold their breath between 4 and 7 hours and be underwater for that long. Just hanging out, doing whatever, chilling, 4 to 7 hours.
Yeah, doing whatever frogs do.
Mm-hmm. And they also...
Man, I saw a frog get a bug the other day. I was outside on a walk, and there's a bunch of frogs out here where we live. Like, when it rains outside, a bunch of frogs come out.
Uh-huh.
We're just walking along, me and my wife, and there's a frog on the ground. And I stopped to look at, I like looking at frogs. I'm a dork, I guess. There's all kinds of, all different colors and shapes and sizes out here. And I was looking at them, and there's like an ant or something walking along beside them, and I'm just watching it go, flop, like a fastest freaking lightning destroyed that freaking bug. I was like, dang. Sorry, it's a side little tangent talking about frogs.
It's fine. They're cool.
Yeah, but I've seen videos online. I've never been like sitting there looking at a frog when it like snatched a bug's life out of away from itself. Yeah. Get that freaking bug's soul, man.
Your soul is mine.
Yeah, it was quick. And it wasn't even like in front of him. Like it was beside him. And it like, if, like. Yeah,
frogs are surprisingly agile for fat, lazy pieces of crap. They're pretty agile. And the other thing, the last kind of cool fact is they can drink water, obviously, but they don't have to. They can just soak it up and absorb water into their system and be like, okay, I'm hydrated, cool. I don't have to worry about drinking it. And so I thought those were all really cool little facts, little factables that, you know, about frogs, because frogs are cool.
Mm-hmm. What are the other two heart bosses? Do you remember? Do you have written down?
I have them written down, but let's see here. There's another brief boss. There's Helios, the golden crab. Do you remember that? We had to fight all those ninjas. Every time you kill him, he went underground and like a wave of ninjas or whatever.
That was kind of irritating.
It went on for a long time. I was like, jeez.
Multiple waves of enemies, yeah.
And he was just a golden crab he liked to shine in the sun, and he was annoying a cockatrice. And she's like, go get him out of the way. And you're getting him out of the way as you killing him. Good thing he ends up being a jerk, so killing him's okay. Because, your character just kind of goes with the flow. Someone says, this person's bad. She's like, okay, I'll take care of him. No big deal.
I'll murder him, please.
Just go for it. But that fight was tedious.
Yeah, that wasn't like a boss per se. It was like it was the open area, and he would fight him, and he would go underground, and all the other people would run at you. You fight all of them, and then he would come back up. It was just like a 3 or 4 waves or something of that nonsense. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was more like a just a little side. Was that a side quest? I
don't know. No, you had to do that in order to move forward.
Oh, because you had to get the cockatrice plume to do the next part.
The plume, and then you had to do the egg.
Whatever, you had to something get some like sort of, that. Some so sort of item to
put it in that. Put you in that dragon vine. You had to give him a shiny so he would open up, and you could go fight the boss of the area, which was a Shani the Sorceress. Mm-hmm. She is the second heart container boss, and that fight was epic. It was kind of intense because she would be immune to damage while these little vines that were glowing while they were glowing. You had to break the vines first, and then she would and get weak, and like wherever she was floating, she would float over and land on top of the mound. You just beat the crap out of her. It's like, yeah, you know, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
You had to dodge. You had a lot of projectiles you kind of got to dodge through. But luckily, if you're like,
by then, if you've been buying all the potions,
yeah, you got plenty of health. Or if you're on the one side of the vines with the barrier, you're kind of like, it blocks the projectiles for you. So you kind of use the environment to your advantage. She was, you know, that was whatever. She was fine, but she was another heart container. No, she wasn't a heart container boss. I misread that. She after you beat her, you get a mechanism to go to the Museum of Time. She gives you some tool that lets you open to get the lever that takes you back to the mansion to ride the elevator up to the Museum of Time.
Yeah,
is that ringing a bell? Because inside the Museum of Time, it's like a boss-a-rama. But it's a boss-a-rama with two bosses, so I don't know what you want to call that—a boss-a-thon, maybe, not a boss-a-rama. But you fight this.
That's the difference between a hallway and a
corridor,
and a hallway, a boss-a-thon, a boss-a-rama.
Who knows? But these are really, really cool mechanical clockwork bosses.
Yeah, they look really cool.
The first one is the dodo, it's a known thing for Alice in Wonderland, the dodo bird. It's cool. It like shoots out little explosive eggs. It's not a bad little fight. But then after you beat the dodo, you then fight, I don't know if it's the coolest looking boss in the game, but the Hydra was the coolest. This is definitely the second coolest boss fight in the game. The boss fight itself was just a boss fight, just running around and dodge. But how the boss looked, it was called, where'd it go? Eagle Blade Prime.
Yeah.
And it's this massive clockwork eagle, and it looked dope.
Yeah.
And like his claws would like glow red, and he would land and try to crash you, and he would like fly up and like swing his wings, and little razor blade feathers would shoot out. He was really cool. He was a really, really cool boss. And he was the second heart container boss. And then after that heart container, you kind of have to, it kind of, like for a game that's like I'm talking about, I'm kind of like, man, that's a lot of stuff stuffed in just about five hours and 16 minutes of gameplay.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, with 5-10 hours, you can do a lot.
You can go through a lot. Now, the next area was kind of weak sauce because you go back to the labyrinth with a key you get at the top of the clockwork to go to the greenhouse and speak to the grasshoppers or the praying mantis doctor, remember? You go to the greenhouse and you have to fight the Queen's Champion, who gives you the third heart container, and she is Flora Esmeralda.
I'm blanking on that part.
Because there's like poison gas, and you had to like do these little lever puzzles to like combine this pheromone and that pheromone to make a combustible, so you can blow up these flowers to move it to the next area with all this poison gas. It was very. It was kind of small. Had 3 rooms, and then you fought the boss.
I don't really remember that.
Like even when you go back and do the clockwork thing, it's literally just 2 floors, 2 bosses done. Here is 3 rooms, a boss done. Like they're like, oh, we're kind of running out of time. We need to, or we're running out of, I don't know, funding, and so these other areas are much quicker. She gives you the third heart container, and then there are those stupid. More spiders are there, and they suck. I hated the spiders, the little mini boss, not mini bosses, but just the regular enemy spiders. They were dumb, and I wanted to punch them in the face. And once you get your third heart container, you get to make it to the Queen's castle.
Yeah, and this is where we go to something we should have mentioned earlier, that because you do get experience But and you just take the experience to a literally just to a guy next to the witch, and he just kind of let you level up. It's like attack power and health or something.
Yeah,
I don't think defense. I think it's just attack power and health. I'm thinking. And right there is because there's an achievement for hitting whatever level it is.
Level 20, I think, is max level.
Max level. So you end up, we both ended up doing a little bit, because even the guys, like, this is like one of the last things you do. Like, you go to the top of the castle, you walk to, what, two screens up, and you fight the last boss.
Yeah.
So you run around that castle back and forth in the hallways of that castle or corridors.
Hallways, you know, whatever you want to call them, passageways.
Fighting the little card guards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little spade, whatever you want to call them, suit. Guards,
yeah, the suits.
The suits. You just kind of fight them for a while until you hit the get enough experience to get the max level.
Before you make it into the castle, there is a giant one you fight called Yoth the Slayer. Mm. That's just kind of I mentioned it earlier, but outside the castle, you have to pull these switches. There's another little sneaking section, but it is so
wide open,
so easy to. I even like ran.
I don't
past
think I got caught on that one.
I didn't get. Caught
I got
on
caught either. On the Tweedledee one, Tweedledum one. I got caught on that, but all it did was put you back at the front of the room. Is all it did.
Yeah, I didn't get caught on either one, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
and then you know, all your friends have been captured and stuff like that, and you see them in cages, and you're like, hey, and they're like, oh, help us, Ravenlock, goth girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Goth mommy or whatever you want to call him. Well, actually, I think this is a child, so please don't put that in there. I don't want to call that. Please delete that.
Ravenlock is your goth mommy?
No, she's a minor. And that leads to the final boss, which is it's a two-phase boss. And it's kind of cool. I really like the design of both, because she's the butterfly queen, I guess you call mm-hmm. her. But I kind of like how they did it is... It was like a reverse metamorphosis, because she was a butterfly, and then you beat her, she pupates and turns into this massive demonic looking caterpillar. It was kind of like a really cool, I think the best word I can use is reverse metamorphosis. Like, that fight was, you know, cool and quick. And like I said, you get some damage, but you have so many potions and bombs and stuff, you shouldn't be struggling with too much anyway. And then you, of course,
more than enough healing to just, you can just power your way through it at this point.
Yeah. And if you hit level 20 at that point, you've maxed out your spell damage and stuff, so you can just trigger all your spells, hit her, trigger all your spells, you know, because the cooldowns were kind of offset. I think they would
I thought I said earlier, when you're fighting the boss, like, anytime you fight anything big, you can just cycle through your skills.
And I don't think any of them made it to double digit cooldown. I think they were all like 2, 5, 8. I think the biggest one was the Tremor one. I think that was about 8 seconds. But most of these fights go pretty, pretty quick. Hey, do you have any thoughts on that final boss? Their name was Dreda. Dreda the Caterpillar Queen.
No.
Or Dreda. D-R-E-D-A.
Yeah. I don't remember having any kind of problems.
I don't really have any struggles. Yeah. No, like I said, the combat is
always pretty lenient. The main thing about the game, though, is not really the bosses look cool. I guess the bosses are worth like talking about.
It's 110%. Like, as much as I hate voxel art, this is the best looking voxel
thing
ever.
People would click on this game because of the way it looks. You know, and that's not a problem with that. Like, you can click on a game based off the way it looks, and that's how you get people to notice your game in the first place. You know. But, you know, and the story's kind of whatever. She gets to be a hero and get rid of the queen, and everybody's happy. And I think she just does she go back? She goes back to the, gets her way back to the real world, I guess.
Yeah, she's kind of like, oh, bye. You have one last little tea party, because you have to, because it's Alice in Wonderland. And they're like, bye, Ravenlock, bye. She's like, I'll never forget you, friends. I'll never forget you. You're like, we're best friends. We've hung out for like 2 days. But, you know, again, happy-go-lucky. And it was fine. Like, I really thoroughly enjoyed the game, especially mm-hmm. for just a 5-hour. What would you call like a mini game like that? Because like a mini book is a novella, mm-hmm. a mini film is a featurette. Is this like a
gamella?
Gamella ant or mm-hmm. game element? No, that's gay element. No, don't. But like, I don't know. What would you call like a short game like that? Because it's not like a walking simulator or anything like that. It's a full blown game, but compressed down into.
I don't know if they even have a name for a short game.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there's a term for that. An experience.
not an
experience. The most experience don't have any gameplay.
Mm-mm. But you see what I mean? Like, there's, you have featurettes and short films, and even with books, you have short stories, novellas, light novels. Like, there's a couple of different things determining the amount of word count in a story, or a length of time for a film, a featurette, short film, so on and so forth. But a short game, they're just weird. I don't know. I've never thought of it, but if anyone knows, holla at your boy. Other than that,
I forgot to write down I never did a rating for this. I keep forgetting. Go ahead and do yours, though.
I don't have one either.
You all should have seen the look he gave me for not having a rating because he forgot about it.
It's not that I just forgot about it. It's I didn't think about it. Okay, I'm going to give it, for me, if I have to pick, I know, okay, I like the game. I like the art. I really dug the music. I loved how short it was and that it was a complete experience that you could knock out in, you know, in a weekend. You know, you play two settings of 3 hours or something like that. And we did have a guide, so maybe we got through a little faster, but I don't think so. I think the game's fairly, like, it tells you exactly where you need to go and what you need to do and stuff like that. That holds your hand. So I'm going to give it, just over sheer enjoyment, I'm going to give it 7 magical bullet sprays out of 10.
Okay. I was thinking somewhere between 6 and 7. You got to always take our ratings with a grain of salt. We might give something like a AAA game, big famous game, a 7, and then give this indie game a 7. There's nothing to say there. It's
amount of enjoyment.
It's that amount of enjoyment. And I was kind of in between a 6 and a 7 as well. So I'll do 7 trips through the looking glass. Classic 7. Alice in Wonderland.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Lazy rating. But went in, was kind of surprised because I didn't kind of know what it was.
I was surprised by how much I enjoyed
what it looked like, and ran around, never really got annoyed with it. And then it ends before it has time to end, like, repeatedly surprised by, you know, how each area, it's an artful game to look at. It's actually, and we've talked about, when I talked about Cloudpunk wasn't fun to look at. Minecraft to me is not fun to look at. Games were just, this is actually the first voxel thing. I was like, this actually looks really good. They did a really good job on this. So I think it's a good solid 7 for me. I enjoyed it. And by the end, anything I can get to the end of and not be, I tell you, I didn't get through Final Fantasy Rebirth. Rebirth isn't like, I don't know if I have a Rebirth episode. Rebirth ain't a 7 to me.
No.
To me, I'm not getting into this right now, but Rebirth was 80% obnoxious.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge, we talk about the podcast. I've been on other podcasts about Final Fantasy 7. Very excited for Rebirth. So to get through a game like this, that's not even comparable. Like I said, not comparable to another 7 or anything like that. I got through this in 5 hours, enjoyed it. Other games, you know, if I can get out of and finish a game and not be completely annoyed by it,
yeah,
that's a big win for me sometimes because most games do annoy me.
By the end of it, yeah. But nowadays, people want to add fluff. And I mean, there's still a little bit of fluff in this. Let's not
talk about fluff. Rebirth. Yeah.
But some games will like add fluff on that last little bit to make you really hang on to the game a little bit longer and stuff like that. And
yeah.
This game does do that with like the little slight Metroidvania nature of it, of you having to go get the, because you come across that elevator that leads to the Clockwork Tower
really early,
right after you do the Tweedle fight,
and you go back there like an hour.
Yeah, or two later. Well, I've also forgot to mention you do touch looking glasses as warp points.
Yeah, mirrors. Yeah.
Yeah, the mirrors like are
6 or 7 of them.
Yeah, and they're pretty awesome location. Placed, yeah, very strategic, so you can zip through the game all the faster. But yep. Yeah. You want to announce our
next game? We talked about earlier off the podcast. We forgot that it's a 5 episode, mm-hmm. 15. So we're not doing we got to push the game we talked about earlier.
Oh crap! You're right. Yeah. It is. We did 14.
So next episode will be 115. Which now these used to be our Gamefly episodes. We've kind of pulled back on that a little bit. We talked a lot about Gamefly games. We still get a lot of those games, but what it is next is we do podcast on the games we play on our streams, our co-op endeavor streams. Brian's hearing about this. He's probably forgot what game is next too, so he can start getting his notes and getting ready. But the next game we're talking about, and Brian will be joining us on the podcast, will be the published by EA, BioWare smash hit Anthem.
Si, senor.
So with that said, speaking of the Twitch streams, you know, come join us on the Twitch streams and watch. Right now we're playing Dark Souls 2. Follow us to get notified when we go live and stuff like that, because our schedules aren't, we're not professional streamers, so there's really no schedule to this. We try to stream at least once a week. Come hang out, talk about video games, and be a part of the adventure with us, and then, you know, you can write in and we can share y'all's thoughts and stuff like that on the episodes where we talk about those games. And with that, I want to thank Jared Jones and the guys of Emerge for letting us use the song Letting Go for the intro to our podcast. I always say it's probably the best part of the podcast. So if you think that, no hard feelings. I agree with you most of the time. I want to thank Devious Pixel, a.k.a. Mlad Markovic, for the art for the podcast and art for other podcasts and stuff as well. He's a great guy, really nice guy. If you want to hear from him, you can actually go to episode 70 of this podcast where we actually had him on interview and talked about art and video games and all that fun stuff. That was a good time. Oh, yeah, and Blake Schumer, and I forgot about it. If you live in Tennessee and stuff like that, Emerge has just posted a show that they're doing on July 16th in Knoxville. They're opening for Drowning Pool, which is kind of cool. Not the best Drowning Pool, but, you know, still Drowning Pool, still Emerge doing big shows. So go to find Emerge on their social media. And if you're in Tennessee or anywhere near the Knoxville area, go see them.
And that'll be July 16th at the concourse in Knoxville.
Yeah, I said that. I think I didn't say concourse. I said in Knoxville. Yeah, if you hang out, meet Jared and a couple of guys. Tell Jared that you know Drew and Blake from the podcast sent you there to see him, and he'll really appreciate that. And he loves that kind of stuff. And we may or may not make it. We did one of his hometown Chattanooga shows not too long ago. We got to go see him again. But anyway, go check them out. You know, buy all their merch when you go there. Buy all the merch they have. Support the guys. They're obviously a great man in our opinion. Not just because we've had them on the podcast and we've hung out with them a couple of times. Just a cool freaking. They're a good band. Legit good band. So I always want to thank Brian for sticking with us and editing the podcast. It helps me out because I'd like to record it and then edit it. And it's just not the most fun thing in the world. I doubt he's having fun editing it, but at least helps me because I still have to record and edit the other podcast that we have, which Blake's going to talk about here in just a moment. So we definitely appreciate that. So just come hang out to the Twitch streams and we'll be doing that, again soon. And that's all I got. And don't forget, I keep mentioning it. He mentions it in some of his videos. Our cousin Daniel's YouTube page. He's doing his cool stuff. He also, I don't know if you, Blake, he also, his new season 3 intro, he talked to Jared too. Mm-hmm. And got a song for his intro.
Oh, really?
And his is cooler than ours because he's paired it with like clips from his games he's been playing. So the music like
kind of goes plays better.
Plays with the.
Well, he has a visual medium, so he gets to have a little more fun.
I'm blanking on the song. I'm sorry, Daniel. I'm blanking on what song it is. You'll message me and remind me. Is it Divide? Not important. But anyway, he got an Emerge song too, so it's pretty cool. But I always want to keep pushing his stuff, so keep Daniel going too. I'll usually put a link to it, or I've mentioned it before. Zukovius. Just go find him on YouTube. He's doing season 3 of his channel right now, just playing video games and having a good time. It's pretty funny a lot of the time. So. He does little challenges, and you can message him and find him too to ask for him to do certain challenges. He takes challenges too. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always succeed, but that's really not the point. Sometimes he succeeds too freaking fast. He did a couple. I think he did like two of them where he sets a time for how long something might take, and then he like does it immediately in like 5 minutes, and then he just kind of like plays the game and gabs for a while because he's got to have content.
Yeah.
Somebody think of, watch his videos, see the kind of games he plays. Think of a hard challenge. Think of something that's really hard that you really don't think he can do, and message him. I'd like to see him do something he really can't do. That'd be funny.
Take on all.
Or find his for our 100 episodes, he did the Two Smoking Controllers episode where he tried to play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with two controllers.
And that's Turtles in Time.
He tried to play it with a controller in each hand. That was pretty silly, but
while rocking one of our it an OG shirt or 100 episode shirt?
I think OG shirt.
OG shirt.
But still, very cool. So go support him as well. That's all I got. I'll stop talking.
Some self promotion on my end. We have a brother podcast called Suspension of Disbelief.
Yeah, we changed the name of the podcast.
Suspension of Disbelief. It's a deep dive movie podcast that spawned from this one because I used to try to sell people on movies and TV shows without spoiling them. Now we decided to just go full-blown spoiler country, territory, whatever you want to call it. With us and our good buddy Steve, where we take turns we take turns semi-surprising one another with movie picks, and we don't discuss it in any way, shape, or form until we record, so our opinions don't influence the other, and it's our first time hearing each other's opinion about said movie. And it was a deep dive. Directors, writers, we talk about certain scenes, and if we can find it, we talk about how certain scenes were made or certain practical effects were done, stuff like that. Not everything's easily found.
Talk about how movies, you gotta like movies. I try to like movies maybe as much as Blake and Steve to really get into people's careers and what it, you know, sometimes what it takes to make a movie and stuff like that. And then the actual plot and stuff obviously comes in there, but there's like,
because sometimes like we'll record a 2.5, maybe even 3 hour podcast, and the first 90 minutes is us just talking about the careers of the people involved before we even get to the movie.
Not for everybody.
Not for everybody, but it's cool hearing people's conversation. Yeah. And the last thing is I self-published a short story on Amazon called They Come This Night. It is a very short, it's a short story. Speaking of things that are smaller, it's a short story because it contains, you know, so many words, less than 7,500 words. If you are a member of Kindle Unlimited, it is free for you. If not, it is just $1. Please go check that out. I have a lot of love for it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't think I could be any better than what it is. I love it. Please go, you know, check that out. Rate it if you like. And that about covers it for me. Drew, do you got anything?
No, that's it.
All right. I want to wish everybody a good evening and good night.